The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I mean, the Dow's been moving. I mean, just on a tear. I mentioned the NASDAQ. Dow's at 44,000, which I think is about 8,000 higher than the highest point.
There we go. And there's the bell.
There it is.
Wow.
Big day for 47. You got the New York Stock Exchange now. You've got Time Magazine. We just got a transcript of this interview. It reads 59 minutes in length. Mm-hmm. And Dana, as you point out, it was done at the end of November. So some of it may be dated.
It was done November 25th. So a lot has happened. That was before Thanksgiving. That was before he announced Kash Patel. It was before all of these changes in the Middle East. A lot has changed, including, but here's a question about, do you plan to fire your handpicked FBI director, Christopher Wray? And he says, I'll be announcing something in the future, and now we know. So you could go through this. There are some really interesting nuggets, but I do think that the interview is a little dated. But what is not dated is this moment right here with President Trump, Time Person of the Year, surrounded by family and getting ready to kick off an amazing, I guess, 39 days now until the inauguration.
Time Person of the Year. This after all of the lawfare, he was nearly assassinated just 5 months ago. He's there this morning at the stock market, ringing the bell to kick things off with his family. The only thing wrong with the Time cover is there's no fight picture. The most iconic political photo, perhaps, in U.S. history. There he is, July 13th, surviving a would-be assassin's attempt to murder him. And now here he is. He's on top of the world. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show after a very special day yesterday, not just for the program, but all through the day as we concluded the event, or rather with the event. Lee Smith, A Conversation with Lee Smith, or An Evening with Him, I think we titled it. That went very well, and he's now on his way back to his home state of South Carolina. So it was great to have him. We've got quite a lot of footage and segments lined up for the next few programs, including one on today's show. Make sure you tell your friends and family about the program, TrumpetDaily.com, and also you can get to it at the Rumble channel, Rumble.com/TrumpetDaily. I think yesterday we had some really good help with promotion for the program, for the interview with Lee Smith. 6,000 people watching live, I believe, something like 38,000 or so that have seen the program since. So some good numbers there. Thanks in large part to Rumble. We appreciate their support. What a difference, by the way. We were on YouTube a few years ago through up to the COVID scaremongering when so many of our videos were being censored and probably shadow banned on top of that. And now you actually, we'll certainly hope that at last we've got our backup at our own website just in case something goes wrong with Rumble. You just never know. It's kind of like Lee Smith told us. He told us this in conversation. It didn't come out in one of the interviews. But as far as Elon Musk showing such enthusiastic support for Donald Trump, he just wondered, you know, how long does this last? He asked us, do you think it will last? Because, you know, Musk hasn't always been a fan of Donald Trump. And then I don't think X, or formerly Twitter, is perfect by any means, but I guess we got on the subject because of Truth Social, and we were asking, that's Trump's venture, because when he was basically censored from social media, he just went out and started his own with Devin Nunes. Anyway, this is man's system. In some ways, it's kind of like every man for himself, but we certainly have seen some dramatic twists and turns all through the course of this year. And I can't be too hard on Time Magazine for not using the fight, fight, fight photo. This is our most recent trumpet magazine. But when we've got such a wonderful art department that can do our own paintings, you go with this. Trump, the miracle victory. Gary Dorning was the one who painted this portrait of Trump. That's on the January issue of the Trumpet magazine. And in just, I haven't yet read through a lot of these articles, but A Miracle Victory by My Father. After that, The Blueprint for an Economic Resurgence. We've talked so much about Donald Trump coming back. It's prophesied. There is going to be a resurgence. It's not going to be long term, but it is coming. And then added to this, I mean, look at the dramatic events. And we talked with Lee Smith about this yesterday. You'll see a 19-minute segment at the end of today's show where we talk about the Middle East and Syria. I mean, for Syria's regime to collapse in 11 days. And, you know, this week, Israel pretty much just wiped out Syria's military arsenal. You had your questions about replacing the Assad regime with an al-Qaeda group. Well, Israel just managed to take out the entire Syrian Air Force, so they've got no hardware. It's amazing what's happening. Israel now controls the skies over Syria. And as Lee Smith said in the segment that you'll see today, I believe, I mean, that strong alliance between Syria and Iran, it is gone. It is over. Where will they go to next, Syria? They're going to need some help. Lee Smith put the focus on Turkey yesterday. And that's certainly part of this new alliance that's forming, discussed in Psalm 83. But Germany, and I've got an article from GermanForeignPolicy.com showing just how involved Germany was, even in the collapse of the Assad regime. It's not getting many headlines in the Western media outlets, for sure. But for its part, GermanForeignPolicy.com did shed some light on that. We've got an article in this latest issue, the January issue. After Trump's victory, watch Germany. Germany's government collapsed the day after Donald Trump was reelected. Watch Germany. Look for Germany. Just flipping through some of the rest of this. It says here, the Trump effect on the Middle East. I mean, we've seen Obama's plan for the Middle East, right? Empower Iran. And during the Syria civil war, just give more power to Iran and Russia. All of that has blown up in the face of Barack Obama. And now we're thinking about the Trump effect on the Middle East. It says what Trump's return means for Asia. This is, if you aren't a subscriber to the Trumpet magazine, you are missing out on tomorrow's news today. Call our 800 number there. You see it at the bottom of your screen, 1-866-930-3024. There's a lengthy article in here on the fall and the rise of Lebanon. This article I'll get to in a minute from the Times of Israel. Now that the Assad regime has collapsed in Syria, and here again, Lee Smith brought this out, the land bridge between Hezbollah in Lebanon and Iran, the supplier, the paymaster, it's completely severed. Basically, Iran has lost its Hezbollah proxy overnight in 11 days. And this, too, aligns perfectly with Bible prophecy. As I said earlier this week, we're seeing, in many ways, a realignment worldwide in Asia, in Europe, in the Middle East, even here in the United States. There he is, Donald Trump, ringing the bell at Wall Street, and the Time Magazine Person of the Year. Who could have imagined this just a couple years ago, even earlier this year? I mean, the man was convicted. It was a sham trial, of course. It's lawfare of the highest order. But Donald Trump was convicted, and then a little over a month later, he was shot in the head. And now he's basically the king. The whole world sees him. There's an article I have for you today as well about the shrinking presidency of Joe Biden. It was funny last night, even at the evening conversation with Lee Smith. He talked about a scenario as if Joe Biden was in power. We were sitting there thinking, well, he is in power, but he really isn't, is he? The world doesn't see him as the rightful president of the United States. That's why they welcomed Donald Trump with open arms in France last weekend. And that's why they're cheering USA, USA, USA in Manhattan, Lower Manhattan, this morning at the stock exchange. You see the change in the mood. At Breitbart, it says, Trump rings New York Stock Exchange bell as he's named the Times Person of the Year again. And then right below that, 9 months after New York hoax trial, greatest comeback in history. That was the headline at Breitbart earlier today. Greatest comeback in history. Richard Palmer, he commented on this in the morning brief. The guy that went on NBC, or the Time Magazine guy that went on NBC, saying that, you know, for better or for worse, Donald Trump's had the impact. He's had the most significant impact on the news cycle this past year. It says, this is someone who made an historic comeback, who reshaped the American presidency, and who's reordering American politics. Reshape, reorder. Everything's being dramatically transformed, and overnight, as I said the other day, sudden and dramatic. It says here, it's hard to argue with the fact that the person who's moving into the Oval Office is the most influential person in the news. The most influential. The New York Post had a story about just the shift in the mood here in America. And you see it this morning at the stock exchange. You see it last week in France. This is the Post story. It says, the other day, a former student wrote me regarding post-election events. Quoting him, it says, I just feel like a tide has shifted, and it feels more like the Reagan 1980s than at any point in my life. And this columnist agrees. It says, it's not just that Donald Trump is the once and future president. It's that the entire energy of the nation, and maybe the world, has changed overnight. This is significant. This is dramatic. This is prophesied. This is fulfilled prophecy. That's why you need to subscribe to the Trumpet magazine. Even the January issue that's just now coming out. January 2025. It's just packed. Tomorrow's News Today. It says here, from the Daniel, listen, it lists all this off. Some of these stories we haven't even really had time to get into. From the Daniel Penny exoneration. That was in New York, by the way. You know, the New York people that wanted to send Donald Trump to prison 2 seconds ago. Now they let this guy off who was basically a good Samaritan. He was protecting the people on that subway. But so many of these radical liberals, including Alvin Bragg, they want to send him off to prison. Because this guy he was holding in the chokehold died from it. He was a crazy man. He was a wild man. He was issuing threats to people on that subway. And here it's people like that that they want to put in prison. And then hardened criminals that they want to let out of prison. Tables have turned, though. It says here, to the reopening of the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris before all the leaders of the West, including Donald Trump, but notably excluding Joe Biden, to the triumphant flights of Starship and a sudden shift in relations with previously difficult neighbor countries like Mexico and Canada, these last few weeks have felt like one big shout of we are back. We are, America is back. USA, USA goes the chant this morning at the stock exchange in Lower Manhattan, the mood is very different. Politico has a piece about the shrinking Biden administration. They should add illegitimate on top of it. Joe Biden is president of the U.S. for 42 more days, but within the Democratic Party on Capitol Hill and even within his own administration, it feels like he left the Oval Office weeks ago. What is going on? Remember that clip we played a few shows ago where the Fox News lady was saying, yeah, back in 2016, everybody in Obama's administration was saying, hey, there's only one president at a time. Let Obama and his people take care of the transition here. It's not like that now. Now you've got Trudeau making his pilgrimage to Mar-a-Lago. As that Post piece brings out. You've got innocence now being exonerated rather than being put in prison, like all those January 6 protesters. It says Biden has effectively disappeared from the radar in the wake of the Democrats' bruising electoral loss. Since November 5, he's largely stuck to prepared remarks, avoided unscripted public appearances or press questions, and opted to sit out the raging debate over Donald Trump's victory. He's just gone silent. You don't hardly see him. If you do, you get 7, 8, 9 words. That's it. Biden's low profile since the election has contributed to the sense of rudderlessness that's taken hold across swaths of Washington as lawmakers, aides, and party officials brace for Trump's return to power and seek a new direction and vision ahead of the midterms and 2028. They're settling in. They're bracing themselves for Trump's return. All of the most prominent talking heads in the regime media last night and this morning, I mean, their heads are just exploding over Chris Wray announcing that he's going to step down rather than get fired. The regime is not happy with Chris Wray. You've got to stay in. You've got to stay a few months in. It may take Kash Patel months to get confirmed. So, look, you've got to guide the ship. They know. They know they're about to be exposed. They know that some of them might soon be prosecuted for all of their crimes. And Ray wants out. I think it was Morning Joe. They said he should have stayed in just so that Donald Trump could come in and then fire his second FBI director after Comey. And then he appointed Chris Wray 7 years ago. So make him fire him. And Wray doesn't want any part of that. So he's getting out. Sundance says a pre-planned resignation allows Director Wray to continue portraying FBI officials and agents as victims. And this approach gives corporate media the time to shine the halos and organize their best magnanimous political exit so far. Well, that's his take, but like I said, they weren't happy on MSNBC last night. They think Ray should stay around and lead the resistance there at the FBI for as long as he can. And then you've got Kash Patel for his part. There doesn't seem to be much resistance in the Senate. Pete Hegseth, he's had the MAGA movement rush to his defense. It's looking better and better for him. The Trump camp, they're feeling confident about the rest of their nominees. There's a shift in the mood, even in Congress. Biden and his presidency, the incredible shrinking presidency. And then there's the dear leader, Barack Obama. We played that montage for you yesterday of Lee Smith just making the rounds. This is what he said more specifically, or what he has said more specifically about the dear leader over the years. Clip 3.
the Obama administration lies.
This is insane. You're telling me that Obama was spying on other Americans?
It's not just Joe Biden. It's not the Biden family, and it's not the Biden administration.
It's not just people in government. It's not just people throughout CIA, DOD, the State Department, the different Biden hands. None of this happens without Barack Obama signing off on this.
Joe Biden is the presidential avatar. Biden presented a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for Democratic Party bosses, in particular Barack Obama, and that was is that they could do a whole bunch of different things without ever being held accountable.
The purpose of destabilizing the United States under Donald Trump is because Barack Obama is an agent of chaos. This regime is pathological, demonic, if you will.
As we told Lee Smith yesterday, that's one reason why we've quoted him as much as we have over the years, because he hasn't stopped short of the dear leader. He's gone to the root cause of this communist attack on the United States. It gets back to this man right there. Yesterday on the show, I said, you know, I told Lee Smith, if you watch any of our programs, we've pretty much boiled it down to the fact that it's this Obama or Antiochus, to use the scriptures, Obama versus Trump. And he said, that's right. That's right. But Obama's being exposed. American Greatness has a piece. Falling out of love with Obama. What changed? What changed dramatically and suddenly? Why don't people love him anymore? Obama has occupied an enviable place in the magic circle of celebrity since his first election in 2008. It persisted through Donald Trump's first term and for most of Joe Biden's. Wow. It's like a 14, 15-year run, right? It says, there were signs that Obama's star was fading during the later stages of Kamala Harris's disastrous campaign. And then skipping ahead here, it says, there was a time when Obama might have gotten away with such antics. It just talks about some of his bluster, some of his empty promises. Lee Smith talked about even his speaking. it's just empty. It's hollow. It says here, not anymore. His blatant act of projection was instantly called out and ridiculed. I think it's talking about, you know, the fear of Donald Trump weaponizing the DOJ and how Trump and his people are going to rig elections. And commentators were just like, what are you talking about? That's what you guys have been doing. His blatant act of projection was instantly called out and ridiculed. It's over for Obama. The spell is broken. Donald Trump vanquished him. Biden, Harris, the Bushes, and the Cheneys, all of them with a spring in his step. He's vanquished them all. Donald Trump. It says, remember when Obama won the Nobel Peace Prize for not for anything he did, but merely for existing? Remember that? He got it in 2009, I believe. He did nothing. But they gave it to him. The Europeans gave it to him because they were seduced by his words. It's not working anymore, is it? Now they're sweating a bit. American Thinker had a feature right at the top of its website. Obama floats pardon trial balloon amid deep state frenzy to get on the list. The fake president, I think he pardoned, 1,500 people yesterday? I don't think they were deep state actors, but he's getting around to that. This says here, when does Barack Obama ask Susan Rice to petition Joe Biden for a presidential pardon for himself? With the pardon frenzy buzzing around the Biden camp, a trial balloon for an Obama pardon has already begun drifting toward the Oval Office. Could this really be happening? You know, the gist of this piece is that if a lot of those deep state actors that have gotten away with crimes, and we've made this point before with respect to Hunter, but the more people get pardoned, the more that they're then going to probably have to testify about the crimes that they were pardoned for. It just opened. The more people Biden pardons, and I'm talking about the deep state actors that went after Trump, the more vulnerable the dear leader is. Unless Biden goes so far as to pardon him as well. We'll see. There's some people writing about Bill and Hillary Clinton wanting a pardon as well. Why? What do they need it for? Because they know. Those petitioning now for pardons are doing so because they know the crimes they have committed, and they are afraid that with the massive declassification of information that the incoming Trump administration is planning to make public, that their guilt will no longer remain hidden. They're afraid. They're nervous. They're nervous about being exposed. I mean, this is something that the devil hates the most. That's why he works overtime, to cover up his crimes. But listen to this. A presidential pardon does not waive a person's Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination for future crimes, but a person accepting a pardon, Brennan, Clapper, Comey, Hunter Biden, or anyone else so pardoned, can be forced to testify truthfully about the pardoned crimes since they are no longer at risk of prosecution under federal law. You'll have to testify under oath. Okay, let's talk about these crimes. Who is behind it? It says, by accepting a pardon, a person has admitted guilt to the pardoned crime, a precedent the Supreme Court established in 1915. This fact, without any other evidence, gives the DOJ and the FBI a probative cause to start a new investigation by interviewing and interrogating the pardoned person under oath. Well, you've been pardoned, so we're opening up an investigation into your crimes because you've essentially admitted you committed crimes. This makes it easier. According to this guy, his take, it makes it easier for the DOJ and Cash Patel's FBI to open an investigation. It says all a DOJ or FBI official would have to do is to put a piece of paper in front of the pardoned person and ask that person to enumerate all crimes committed, plus requiring the pardoned person to give the names and details of all criminal accomplices involved. So, we've been making the point for a couple, 3 years now. Everything that these extremists, these radicals do, it backfires on them. They may go into a pardon celebration for all we know. We'll see now if even that backfires on them as well. This article about Israel, really pretty incredible to think about all that's happened in the last 2 or 3 weeks and what was going on. We didn't even get a chance to discuss this with Lee Smith. Israel taking out Syria's military arsenal, but it certainly ties in with the segment you're about to listen to. This is from the Times of Israel. An Israeli bombing campaign earlier this week across Syria aimed at taking out advanced weaponry that could fall into the hands of hostile elements following the collapse of the Assad regime also destroyed the vast majority of the air defenses in the country. Air defenses built by Russia, by the way. According to the military, the IAF destroyed 86% of the former Assad regime's air defense system across Syria, totaling 107 separate air defense components and another 47 radars. Israel's just been on a rampage. Hamas, Lebanon, Hezbollah, and then now Syria. They've had a strike inside of Iran as well. There's no stopping them at the moment. This is the Obama doctrine for the Middle East. It's blowing up in front of our eyes. I mean, this is yet another reason why Obama's been silenced. Why Obama's lost his mojo. His plan didn't work, whether it's in the Middle East or to fundamentally transform the United States. He was close. But it blew up. Says here, only a handful of air defense systems now remain in Syria, and they're not considered a major threat to the IAF. The new freedom of aerial action also brings the IAF, that's Israel's Air Force, new opportunities. It says, while the Iran-backed Assad regime has fallen, Israel still will operate over Syria to ensure that advanced weapons from the former government's army do not reach Hezbollah in Lebanon or any other group hostile to Israel in the region. Hezbollah has been cut off from Iran. Israel's going to see to it that it sticks. This article talks about how Israel can now send in drones to spy on Damascus without really any fear of those drones being shot down. They can fly over Syrian space now. It's incredible what's happening. Here again, the latest issue of the Trumpet, just jam-packed, getting us off to a good start for the new calendar year, January 2025. If you haven't subscribed yet, here's the cover of the latest. Miracle victory. It was a miracle. This was brought on by divine providence. And now you see the Psalm 83 alliance taking shape, and you see the Daniel 11 alliance, the Iranian-led radical Islam. You see that more clearly as well. It says here, a bombing campaign on Sunday and Monday, which began hours after Assad's regime fell, also hit Syrian air bases, weapon depots, weapon production sites, and chemical weapons sites, in addition to the air defense systems. The strikes destroyed hundreds of missiles and related systems, 27 fighter jets, 24 helicopters, and more. They just decimated Syria's arsenal. Now you think about Syria and Lebanon. They're going to have to turn elsewhere. I mean, turn away from Iran. They no longer have support from Iran or even Russia. This article from GermanForeignPolicy.com, it says, with their sanctions against Syria, Germany and the EU have contributed to the fall of Bashar Assad and the triumph of the jihadist militia, HTS. It says the fact that HTS offensive could lead to the capture of Damascus in just 11 days had several causes. It's not all brought on by Germany and the EU, but that's an angle to this story, to this development that few people are talking about. They don't see it. They don't see Germany entering into the region. I've played you those clips from my father talking about just the strategic importance of Syria, particularly its border with the Mediterranean. This article says, the fall of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad blindsided many observers, experts, and politicians. They weren't expecting it. They certainly didn't expect for it to happen this fast either. But just to take you back to the middle of May, this was over graduation weekend here for our students at AC. You've got families visiting in town. My father speaks that weekend, and he spent a lot of time talking about Syria and the Psalm 83 alliance. It's kind of like that sermon he gave the day Donald Trump was shot, July 13th, where he ends, and it just seems or felt at the time almost like it was random or maybe a slightly negative way to finish a sermon talking about Abraham Lincoln when he was assassinated. And then 2 hours after that sermon, Donald Trump was shot in the ear. Why would my father talk so much about Syria on a festive graduation weekend when nobody else was talking about it? Well, because God was directing his mind that way. And he's commented on that. Nobody was even discussing it. And then just a few months later, it blows up. And the regime in Syria has fallen. Sudden and dramatic. It says, when the rapid assault was unleashed, the Syrian armed forces failed to put up any effective resistance. It says here, the intention of using sanctions to push the Syrian population into hunger and revolt was clearly desired and sometimes explicitly expressed in the media. This is talking about the German media. Look, we've got to tighten the screws on Syria, even if the people suffer because of it, because we want to see an uprising. That's Germany. That's Germany and the EU working behind the scenes. Pretty soon, they're going to come out into the open, and it is going to shock the world. We're going to take a quick break and come back and conclude today's show with a 19-minute segment that we recorded yesterday morning with veteran investigative journalist Lee Smith. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Daily news, Bible prophecy. See the connection on the Trumpet Daily. Are you feeling overwhelmed by the flood of news and information? You need something to sift the news and bring you only what matters most. You need the Trumpet Daily. You also need something to help you understand not just what's happening now, but what will happen next. You need the Trumpet Daily. Only the Trumpet Daily accurately matches daily news to precise Bible prophecies. Because Bible prophecy is the only tool up to the task of sifting the news down to what's important and showing you what will happen next. Join host Stephen Fleury every weekday. Go to trumpetdaily.com.
So, Syria was in the midst of a brutal civil war, 13 years, and then in less than 2 weeks, everything changes so suddenly and dramatically. What's your take on how and why that happens so quickly?
Well, I think probably the key factor is Hezbollah, that, you know, Israel's campaign against Hezbollah. I mean, you know, it wasn't just Hassan Nasrallah that the Israelis killed. I mean, there were a number of top Hezbollah commanders, a lot of different fighters on the ground. And when we look at what happened in the Syrian civil war, there was the Syrian Arab army, right? This was Assad's army, that they were an important part of it. But the most important part of it was Hezbollah. You know, Hezbollah kept pushing men in from across the border in Lebanon, and with Israel's campaign against Hezbollah dismantling the group, that's what happened. That's why Assad fell. And then, of course, there was also the fact that the Russians had less manpower as well, because the Russians are fighting on two fronts.
Right.
They're fighting, you know, Ukraine, and also they were fighting in Syria. So with that weakened them enough. And then with the Turkish-backed push from the different, we'll call them rebel groups,
right,
as a matter of convenience, though of course there's lots of different ideologies and issues there.
Yeah.
But I think that was really the driving factor, Israel's campaign against Hezbollah.
Yeah, so you feel like we had Carolyn Glick, as you noticed, last year following October 7, and just as I've noted on the program recently, just the dramatic events across the region since October 7, I think kind of led to this happening so quickly. I mean, less than 2 weeks. It was astonishing.
Yes.
He and his father were in power for more than 50 years.
I think I think it's interesting. A friend of mine, Caroline, knows him too, a guy named Tony Badran. And Tony is at Tablet, where I write for Tablet magazine. Tony is far and away the most brilliant Middle East analyst out there. And Tony's been not just following the civil war, but he followed the Syrian civil war, but he also followed this particular movement by the rebel groups. And his perspective, he didn't know it would go this far. I don't think anyone knew it was going to go this far. Tony's opinion was what was going to happen. The Turks saw an opportunity because what Assad was doing, and this is a weapon that Assad has been using since at least 2011, was to push refugees across the border, especially through Turkey, a lot through Lebanon as well, but especially through Turkey, and this caused enormous problems for Erdogan. So what it seems that at first, what the Turks wanted to do was carve out a certain amount of space to relieve pressure on that border. What happened was they saw how soft it was, though. Right, they saw how soft defenses were throughout the major, you know, throughout the major cities in Syria, including finally the capital, Damascus. So, no one knew that it was going to go this far, because it seems that the plans were not to go this far at first.
Right,
they saw it was loose, and then they pushed.
So even the rebels, you think, didn't really realize that it would be that easy?
I think they were probably surprised. Yeah. that it was that soft throughout the country. But we know, looking at it again, why Hezbollah is vastly depleted, and the Russians, Russian forces, and Russian troops are elsewhere. There's one other very important factor here, though, and if we can take it back a little bit. If we see what happened in 2015 when the Obama administration struck the nuclear deal with Iran, what happened then? Right after the nuclear deal, the Iranians got tons and tons of money, hundreds of billions of dollars that they poured into their war chest. Another thing, right after that deal was struck, the head of the Quds Force, which is the IRGC's expeditionary unit, went to Russia and asked for Russian help. Mm-hmm. So if we look at all these different things, what was propping up Syria? Well, it was the IRGC. It was Hezbollah, right? Because Hezbollah is an IRGC battalion. But also, it was American money. It was American support. So that's the other thing that we can't forget here,
right,
is that with Biden on his way out,
right,
with Biden not cognitively there all the time, the Israelis saw that as an opportunity to move against Hezbollah, and so did the Syrian rebels. That the Americans were not protecting Iranian structures as much as they have certainly during the Biden years.
Right.
So that's a very important factor too.
What do you say to those that are saying that this is Al Qaeda by another name? It's not going to be any better. You made the point just in conversation before we started filming that this really does deal a blow, not just to Assad and his family, obviously, but to Iran as well.
Well, I think that's the crucial part of this, that it's about Iran. Syria was a very, very important part of the Iranian axis,
right,
especially since that's the supply line. That's Hezbollah's supply line. Not only was Hezbollah fighting in Syria to keep Assad afloat, but that's how they get their arms, right, through Syria. So this is an enormous blow to the Iranian axis. So that strikes me as a very, very important thing. Now, as to who will replace Assad, I don't think we should be under any illusions that these are going to be wonderful, wonderful Democrats. Will they threaten American interests? Quite possibly. Will they threaten Israel? Even more likely. But again, this is the Middle East, and policymakers are supposed to be nimble enough to figure out how to manage American interests throughout that region, because it's not Europe.
Right.
It's not even Asia. You have to be pretty nimble and understand what the layout is. So, again, I'm not celebrating, and I don't encourage anyone to celebrate look, what Assad was doing to Syrians was very, very bad. You know, there was a certain point where people who supported Assad and the Iranian structure were saying, well, he's killing terrorists, jihadis. Like, yeah, a lot of them, but, you know, there were also, 7-year-old girls are not jihadis.
Right.
You know, and so as were the Russians, they were killing them too. So, again, I'm glad that for virtually every reason that the Assad regime is finished. But again, we're going to have to look very closely at the outfits, the leaders who are following that.
Right. How do you feel like Iran regroups from these blows?
I think the only hope Iran has is for, and they're in trouble with Donald Trump coming to office, because
mm-hmm.
Donald Trump waged a maximum pressure campaign against them last time.
Right.
He was the one who killed Qasem Soleimani.
Right.
I think Iran is in very big trouble. And I actually think they're in such big trouble that one of the big conversations we've had about Iran for years is about their nuclear program. But let's remember how we talked about Hezbollah, that was the deterrence preventing Israel from striking the nuclear program. Well, if Hezbollah is this weak, if Hezbollah is finished, then the Iranians are incredibly vulnerable. So the way I see this, I think that the fall of the Assad regime presents an original thinker or an out-of-the-box thinker like Donald Trump a whole bunch of opportunities, peace in Eastern Europe, maybe something, I'm not saying a deal with Iran to let them off the hook, but to say, you know, or to empower them, to flood them with money again. Mm-hmm. To say like, yeah, you know, you guys have been knocked down a size, you're in a lot of trouble, you should really focus on taking care of your own people, because you have no more, position in Syria, your position in Lebanon is vastly weakened, so what are you gonna do? Are you gonna keep waging war against the Sunnis? You're going to keep waging war against Israel. You're going to keep fighting American interests. Houthis are going to keep firing on shipping lanes in the Red Sea. You guys are in a lot of trouble. So I'd like to think that Donald Trump can use this, and his administration can use recent events to say, let's see what kind of stability, mm-hmm. With all of these weakened actors, now that they've been hobbled, let's see what we can make out of this. So I'm very hopeful that's how Donald Trump sees it. I mean, there's some indication he does see it like that.
Yeah.
His social media posts on Truth Social after Assad's fall indicated he is seeing this as a way of stopping the bleeding.
Yeah. So you mentioned, obviously there's new leadership in Syria. Yeah. You mentioned Hezbollah being severely weakened in Lebanon. Where do you see those two countries reaching out to? I mean, the new leaders are going to want to be seen as legitimate.
Right.
So do you see them? They're obviously not going to go reach out to Iran, I presume. Where do you foresee them going?
Well, I mean, I think that the new Syrian leadership, whatever that's going to look like, whether it's going to be these guys or this group, Hayat or al-Sham, again, they were backed by the Turks. And so I think that a lot of that is going to go through Turkey.
Uh-huh.
And look, Turkey's a problematic U.S. ally. We can leave it at that. There's all sorts of things we'd prefer the Turks are not doing, including giving shelter mm-hmm. to Hamas officials. That's not a good thing. That's not helpful for the United States and other allies. But Turkey is a NATO member. And Turkey, Turkey's push through Syria and deposing Assad, I think, is a strategic win for the United States and for the West. So that's something that the Turks are going to be managing most closely.
Yeah.
And the United States will be working, presumably through Ankara, on Syria. That'll be the place they go with that.
Yeah.
Lebanon, we have more direct, we will have more direct contacts in Lebanon. And, I lived in Lebanon for years, and I love Lebanon in many ways, but it's... Lebanon's problems will not end with the end of Hezbollah. There's going to be problems there for a while. And, we'll see how those issues are settled. But that's something, it's interesting that the president-elect has, one of his in-laws now, because his daughter Tiffany is married to a young man. And his father, I think his first name is Massad Boulos. He's named an envoy by the president-elect to the Middle East. So he has a lot. He's from Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
He has lots of connections in Lebanon. So he'll be doing some of that work. And he seems to be he seems to know what he's doing. We'll see.
Yeah. You mentioned Turkey being a NATO member. Mm-hmm. Do you see Europe maybe? I mean, not just Turkey, yeah. but Europe getting more involved in Middle Eastern affairs.
Well, I hope what happens is. I hope what happens is that the Syrian refugees head home, right? And I would imagine the Europeans see this as an opportunity. I think that Austria is already moving on that front. A lot of the refugees from Turkey and Lebanon are already going back across the border into Syria. And it's the Europeans' opportunity to act,
right.
And to say, oh, your country is out of the hands of this maniacal madman who was persecuting Sunnis. You are a Syrian Sunni Arab. It is time for you now to go back home, and here's your plane ticket. And
which countries in Europe have the most?
Germany? Yeah, enormous.
Yeah.
I think Austria is probably less, but I think that Germany is the one with the most.
And do you think they'll take action to try to send...
I, They should.
Yeah.
I mean, for the sake of the, you know, for the sake of the population they already had there, and for people, you know, I'd like to think that a lot of the Syrian refugees who left, they, while they've are appreciative, I'm saying this is what I want to believe, while they're appreciative of the generosity of the German people and the German state, they also are keen to move back home and to help rebuild rebuild their own country, Syria.
Do you feel like that those refugees would trust the new government, however that takes shape in the coming months?
That's a good question. I mean, that's a good question, except a lot of people have I think misdescribed the nature of Syria, which is somewhat complicated, the nature of Syrian politics. Mm-hmm. They describe Assad as a secularist. Mm-hmm. Right, as a, you know, he's from a minority religious sect, the Alawites, right? So that was a secularist. He's open to the West. He's not open to the West. I mean, the Assad regime for 50 years, they were doing all sorts of bad things in Europe. So these people are not open to the West. The important part, we as Americans and Europeans tend to divide the world between secular and religious. Mm-hmm. And actually, it's not a nice fight in the United States, right? The way that and this has a lot to do with the antipathy toward, you know, the MAGA, right? The so-called secularist thought MAGA was like religious nuts, but that's not how it is in the sectarian states across the Middle East. The sectarian states across the Middle East, it has to do with religious sect, right? And so Assad's war was against the Sunnis, and the Sunnis' war was against Assad and the Iranians. So a lot of those people, the refugees who fled, most of them were Sunnis.
Mm-hmm.
And so now that Syria will be under Sunni control again, I suspect that they have much less to fear.
Yeah.
I want to say one thing, which is what I think that Syria will eventually wind up looking like. Before the Assad regime, Syria went through, well, there was another Alawite government right before Assad. But before that, the Sunnis are the majority in Syria. And so what you had was, you had like a number of different governments run by Sunnis, and there were coups, there were all sorts of infighting. And look, I hope it doesn't degenerate into violence, but I mean, it's going to be not necessarily stable,
yeah.
But I don't think that it's going to become an Islamic emirate, because that's the nature of Syria. All the different Sunni forces, all the different Sunni power centers, I think they're going to be competing with each other once again.
Yeah.
And this is one of the reasons, by the way, why governments across the West were partial to the Assad regime, including large parts of our own government. Because the Assads, as this is their perspective, as problematic as the Assads were, they brought stability to Syria, and you knew who to deal with, you knew who to go to. So our CIA knew that they could go to Syrian security services, Assad security services, and they had an interlocutor there. So that's going to be changing now.
Yeah. Do you feel like the weaker position for Iran could embolden Israel? You mentioned the nuclear program, and Israel obviously has been pretty aggressive the past year. Do you see Israel maybe going after Iran now that they're in that position?
Donald Trump on the campaign trail before the election, Donald Trump said, after Biden had warned the Israelis not to attack oil facilities, not to attack nuclear facilities, you know, Trump said quite often, he said, yeah, you know, I talked to Bibi, Prime Minister Netanyahu.
Right.
And, I said, I thought that was nuts, saying don't hit the nuclear program. That's one of the first, that's the thing you want to hit right there. So does that constitute a green light now? I'm not sure. And, the president-elect told Meet the Press the other day that he wants to end the war, end the wars in the Eastern Mediterranean, Israel's war with Hamas, Israel's war with Hezbollah. He said, but the Israelis have to get their business done. They have to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very important. And he said, I've seen the pictures from October 7th. You know, there are people who are denying them now. We have Holocaust deniers, and now October 7th. And I said, I know, and they have to go. The Israelis have to go and do their business.
Yeah.
And which is important, of course, that the president is, that this president will support our ally Israel. In a way, unfortunately, the Biden administration did not. But again, does that mean that they have a green light to go after the nuclear program? We'll see.